I'll read from Matthew chapter 9. I'm not going to speak on this, but this is a very familiar story, an account of two touchings. We're thinking this morning, if I could have my slide up, that'd be great. We're thinking this morning just briefly about this last clause in 1 John 1 verse 1, which talks about that which we have touched with our hands. And this is an account of two touchings. And I love it because one is one person who reached out to touch Jesus, to touch the hem of his garment. But the other touching is when Jesus touched a young girl. So it's a story of touchings. Matthew chapter 9, verse 18. While he was saying these things to them, behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live." And Jesus rose and followed him with his disciples. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, "If only I touch his garment, I will be made well." Jesus turned and seeing her, he said, "Take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well." And instantly the woman was made well. And when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion, he said, "Go away, for the girl is not dead, but is sleeping." And they laughed at him. But when the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went through all that district. We want to encourage you today to, I want to be encouraged today too, to reach out and touch the Lord. And to reach and to invite the Lord, ask the Lord to touch you and me today afresh. And as I was thinking, I realised that there's a point that I'm not going to make, but I knew at some point I should have made and I should make. And that is, as well as thinking about us and our engaging with Jesus in that way, Lord, I want to reach out and touch you, or Lord, will you touch my life afresh? I want to ask the question, or I might leave it hanging, what kind of presentation are we, you and I, making to the world? Because if people who are not yet followers of Jesus are to touch the Lord Jesus, then they need to touch you and me. Does that make sense? And to ask ourselves the question, when someone touches my life, not just physically, but when they encounter me, are they meeting Jesus? It may be a bit of a broken image, as I have just said, but are they encountering something of Jesus that they can see in us? Because we are his hands, his feet, his flesh and blood, if you like, today. I might leave that question hanging. We'll see how we go. But in 1 John 1, verse 1, we've been looking at the last few weeks, John says, The eternal life, that which we... Who can remember the order? What's the first one, without looking at your Bibles? What's the first one? That which we have seen. Remember the process. And then he says, that which we have... And then he says, that which we have seen, beheld, if you like. It's what I was looking at last week, that we have seen with our eyes, but we have also beheld. And then that which we have touched, which... I want to look at briefly this morning. Last week, you remember, I'm sure you've been saying it to yourself all week, I'm absolutely certain. This word, we heard about this word, theaste, which can be translated into English as beheld, and carries the meaning, as I mentioned last week, to study or to examine something closely so as to grasp its significance or its meaning. As the disciples, we thought a little bit, as the disciples reflected on the life of Jesus, their experience of Jesus, the magnificent truth of who he really was began to gradually dawn on them. As somebody quoted, I said last week, they penetrated beyond what was accessible. They penetrated beyond which they could see and hear and touch to the outward vision to discern the inward glory. They saw beyond what they saw with their own eyes. And this fourth claws, that which we have touched with our hands, is very closely associated to that idea of studying or examining closely that which was before them. It has the feel of inspecting something. You know, if you, you're going around a junk shop or even a first-hand brand-new shop and you're picking up a vase or something and you, if you're allowed to, you pick it up and you examine it closely. It's got that kind of feel about it, to authenticate it, to substantiate its genuineness. I hope Steve won't mind me saying this, but I was given a desk about 17 years ago from a friend. It wasn't a family heirloom or anything like that. And I knew very little about it. I was told very little about it, but it was an old desk. It's a beautiful desk. It's an interesting desk. And because I was interested, I asked Steve, who apparently knows a little bit about this sort of thing, I asked him if he would come round and look at it for me. And he did very kindly come round and look at it for me. But he didn't just stand back and sort of admire it from a distance. He actually got down on his hands and knees, which for a man of his great age is, not something to be scoffed at. And he got down on his hands and knees and he looked at it and he touched it and he pulled it around a little bit. He opened the drawers and showed me the quality of the, what are they called, tenon dovetail joints. He showed me the top of the desk. He said, look at this, and he explained, and he was able to describe how the wood had been cut, which direction it had been cut in, how it had been cut, and so on and so forth. He even suggested a date around which it might be made, a sort of an approximate idea of when it was made. And because of one or two design features, he even suggested which country it may have been made. He's a clever chap. And some say. Well, that's what you told me. Anyway. And I was very grateful for that knowledge. You see, he didn't just stand back and look at it. He got down and he touched it. And he was able to explain about it to me, and it was fascinating. And that is the sense that this passage carries. Authentication of something because of our ability to touch it. Eugene Peterson in the Message translates this, I think, quite helpfully. He says of this fourth clause, we have verified it with our hands. We've been able to authenticate it. We have verified it. Verified that is the eternal word of life. We have verified it with our hands. Commentators suggest that John, when he's writing this, has particularly in mind, has got Jesus' resurrection appearances. That after he had risen from the dead, his disciples touched him, to prove that he wasn't just a figment of their imagination. And there are at least three, and I just want to touch them very, very briefly, three instances towards the end of that gospel. I don't know why that number four is there, a little glitch, that we know about. And of course, the first is Jesus' encounter with Mary Magdalene in John chapter 20. Do you want to just turn to that very briefly with me? John 20, verse 16. After his resurrection, you know, the first encounter he had was with Mary. John 20, verse 16. And verse 17. You know, they've met. She thinks he's the gardener. But Jesus says to her, Mary. And she turned round and said to him in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. And then Jesus said to her, do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. And Mary Magdalene went. The King James Version at this point says, Jesus says, do not touch me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father in heaven. And that has caused some people to assume that Jesus is saying that for some reason he could not be touched. You know, had he had he not yet fully risen? Or, I don't know, was he particularly hot? Or, you know, we don't know. But that's the impression. Was he particularly holy at that point? We don't know. It doesn't say anything about it. But it's given the impression that Jesus is saying, I can't be touched. But actually, that we know that can't be the meaning of that passage. Because just a few verses, as we will look at in a moment, Jesus invites his disciples to touch him. The word that is translated here, touch, actually comes from the Greek word, another Greek word, haptomai. And haptomai means to fasten oneself to adhere to, or to cling to. And in this instance, the English Standard Version, the NIV, and most of the other translations are better, have a better translation than the King James. And the better translation is, Jesus says, do not cling to me. Do not hold on to me. I don't know about you, but I hate, especially when I'm saying goodbye to someone, I hate departure lounge in airports. You know that? That's horrible, horrible, horrible. We had one of the worst experiences of our life, didn't we, at the beginning of this year, saying goodbye to Sam. But one of the best experiences of our life when we went to meet him. I love arrival lounges in the airport, don't you? They're fantastic places. And earlier this year, as I said, in July, we went to meet Sam at Heathrow. He'd been in Tanzania for 6 months. And as he came through the gates, I walked manfully up to him, chest extended. I stretched out my hand and took hold of his hand, and I said, welcome home, son. Did I heck? As soon as I saw him coming through the door, I ran to him and I gave him the biggest, longest, hardest bear hug I have ever given him in my life. And I kept hold of him because I was pleased to see him. It was a wonderful occasion. And early yesterday morning, I had to go back to Terminal 2 Heathrow to pick up some very close friends who'd been away for a number of weeks, and pick them up from Heathrow. And it was so moving. I was there early enough just to look around and see people who are waiting, you know, by that metal thing as they're coming through the door, and they're waiting, and some of them had banners saying welcome home to whoever it was, and they were looking, and they were eager, and they were expectant that soon, any moment soon, their loved one was going to come through those gates. And what a move. I mean, I was nearly in tears, moved to tears by some of these reunions and these things. It was so wonderful, so moving. When Mary recognized Jesus, I am absolutely certain, aren't you, that she, as soon as she heard her name, Mary, she turned around, she recognized him, she ran to him and embraced him, gave him the biggest embrace that she possibly could. She loved him. And she gave him the biggest, warmest bear hug that she could muster at that time in the morning. And Jesus lovingly, caringly said, Mary, don't hold on to me. Nothing to do with don't touch me. She was touching him. She was embracing him. She was loving him. She was pleased to see him. And he knew it, and he loved her. And he said, Mary, don't hold on to me. Don't hold on to me now. Don't hold on to me until, because I'm going to go. I've still got to go. I've got to return to the Father. But she embraced him. And when Jesus, when the disciples in the upper room, Jesus appeared to them. Let's read those two verses, verse 19. On the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors were locked where the disciples were for fear of the Jews. Jesus came and stood among them and said to them, peace be with you. And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. And then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. Now, John doesn't elaborate at this point. But if you turn to Luke's gospel, if you turn to Luke chapter 24, Luke elaborates on that moment, verse 37. And Luke writes, they were startled and frightened and thought they'd seen a spirit. And Jesus said to them, why are you troubled? And why do doubts rise in your hearts? See my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. And then he says, touch me. Touch me and see. For a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have. So there's that lovely invitation of Jesus to his disciples. Touch me. You know, I'm here, I'm flesh and blood. He's got the resurrection body. I'm here, I'm not a ghost. I'm here, touch me. And then just a few verses later, of course, Thomas wasn't there in the first instance. Just a few verses later, we know it so well, but let's read it. John 20, verse 26. 8 days later, his disciples were inside again and Thomas was with him. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. And then he said to Thomas, put your finger here and see my hands, and put your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe. And Thomas answered him, my Lord and my God. Isn't that one of the most moving passages? And here is, some of you will know, Caravaggio's The Incredulity of St. Thomas, an amazing piece of work painted in 1603. Just gaze at it for a moment. And as you gaze, don't you just love Thomas's face? And look at how far in he's sticking his finger into the wound of Jesus. At Jesus' invitation. And don't you love the other disciples looking on? This is a perfect illustration of theastai, of touching, of investigating. And this is Jesus' invitation. If Thomas is going to live with the conviction that Jesus really is the Messiah, the divine Son of God, then he needs that conviction to be attested, to be authenticated, and to be substantiated. And Jesus is gracious enough to understand and to give him that opportunity. John testifies in 1 John 1 verse 1 that he has seen and heard and beheld and touched with his hands the eternal word of life. And of course, we can't touch Jesus in the same way, but the disciples were able to touch him because he has ascended to his Father's side, where he is seated and reigns with him until he comes again. But he is no less real. He is no less hearable, seeable, knowable, and touchable. I have touched the Lord. Have you touched the Lord? In that sense? And the Lord has touched my life. Has he touched your life? And I certainly have felt his presence and his touch upon my life. Of course, it's not the same as those first disciples, but it is no less real. The Lord is alive. He is risen from the dead. He is here with us today. He is especially here as we share this bread and wine together in remembrance of him. He is here by his Spirit. This is his table. He invites us to come and share in this meal. He invites us to draw near to him, to reach out to him, to touch him, to receive from him, and to be ministered to by him. The Lord is here. And Rosemary is so right. We can choose to stand back and sing some lovely songs, some lovely words, but remain distant. Or we can choose to engage. We can choose to enter in. And we can do that here and now. The Lord is here.
His Spirit is with us. Will we reach out and touch Him? That's His invitation. So come to this table, not because you must, but because you may. Not because you are strong, but because you are weak. Come not because any goodness of your own gives you a right to come, but because you, like me, need fresh help and fresh mercy. Come because you love the Lord a little, but want to love Him more. Come because He loved you and gave Himself for you. Come and meet the risen Christ, for we are His body.